Welcome to Impact Africa with Tope Fajanbasi. Africa has long been associated with needing aid and handouts. Today, you'll learn so much more about this wonderful continent from enlightening stories, people, and ideas. Now, here is your host, Tope Fajanbasi.
Welcome to Impact Africa, Season 2 and Episode 2 of Season 2. I'm very delighted to be here. I'm joining everybody from Detroit, Michigan, and I'm very glad the weather isn't so cold out here today. And it's a very, very, very wonderful day, and I hope that technology will cooperate with us, as I have guests from all over the world today, and as in, I'm serious, all over the world. We're going to be talking about, you know, poverty eradication, how we can use in Africa, how mobile technology is actually driving the growth of, you know, the economies in many of the African countries, and how we can further, you know, continue to do this. Because when it comes to mobile phone usage in Africa, the numbers just don't lie. From the cities to the remote villages, I'm telling you, in my own hometown, you know, where power supply is not even constant, Africans are wired in the millions. Everybody has got a mobile phone. If you go to Nigeria, they're carrying three or four phones. And, you know, the question is, can this trend translate to economic growth? Or is it already growing the economy? Is there a way that we can do things better because we're all carrying mobile phones? And, you know, can mobile phone technology really solve some of the pressing problems that we have? Can it just be something that we use beyond just surfing the web and just talking to people in other places? And, you know, that's really what we're going to be talking about today. So you're going to have a fantastic time because I'm joined by people who know much more about this topic than I do. I'm joined today, first of all, I have two guests, Claude Grunitsky, he's the chairman of True, and David Lee, he's the mobile director. And, you know, gentlemen, welcome to the show.
Hello. Hello, everybody.
Well, hello, everyone. Wait, Claude, what day is it in Tokyo right now?
Absolutely. Here for until through the end of the week.
It is.
And then next week, David and I will be in Lomé working on more of our entrepreneurial ventures for West Africa. But we'll get into that in a minute.
Oh, wow. Fantastic. And David, thank you so much. I know you are with my friend Idris Bello in Rome.
Yes,
and
that's correct.
It's about 1 a.m., right?
Yes, they're all sleeping now.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I really thank you guys for being awake, for being here. So it's a honor to have you. Let me tell my listeners a little bit about you guys, because I've been reading your bio all day and I've been very intimidated. So I want to intimidate them a little bit. So I will start with Claude. He's an MIT Sloan Fellow. He was raised in Lomé, Togo. And he, oh my goodness, he's a world citizen. From Lomé, from Washington, D.C., from Paris, and from London. Claude speaks 6 languages and carries 3 passports. Oh, my God. His exposure to so many cultures has shaped his...
The thing is, though...
Go ahead.
Even though I carry 3 passports, I still define myself as a native son. I'm still a child of Lomé.
You know,
I was born in Lomé, and I will always have been born in Lomé. So... As I've become, I guess, more of a global traveler, paradoxically, I've kind of reconnected with my Togolese roots. So I wanted to throw that in there before we get started.
Oh, okay. Well, that's good to know. But, you know, it's also good for my people to know that you speak 6 languages. Oh, my goodness. And you have produced a documentary for BBC. You have written for so many leading newspapers, including The Guardian. And, you know, hey, what can I say? You were nominated most influential French person in America by France Amérique magazine. Whoa. Well, I'm really impressed. And then I want to talk about David a little bit. David has worked in prominent financial institutions in Paris, in London, and in Boston, the greatest cities in the world. He has also performed research, consulting, and entrepreneurial work in the field of telecommunications in Africa for Intel, Virtual City, that's Kenya's leading mobile applications company, and Move, Togo's largest privately owned telecom operator. David holds a degree in engineering and also is an MIT alum like you. And David, this is why he's in Rome right now. He's a board member of the Harambe Entrepreneur Alliance. You're both welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
It's really a big honor to have you. So let me ask you, first of all, Claude, You said you are embracing your Togolese roots. I like that. But how do you feel? How does it feel to be a world citizen, really? Claude, can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, I think we're having some technical difficulty because I didn't get to hear the second part of the sentence.
Oh, I said, how does it feel to be a world citizen? How does it feel to be from all these parts of the world?
Well, I think a lot of us Africans, we've been accustomed to become nomads. We are a large part of the makeup of a lot of Western societies now. We're part of the diaspora, but what's important with many of us is even though we've traveled and we've become citizens of other nations as well, we've kept our African values and our African identity, which is also being shaped by the meetings and the experiences that we've had in the outside world. So for me, it's important to carry these experiences into the African identity and shaping the modernity of what we can bring to Africa through business and through entrepreneurship, which is what David and I focus on.
You know, and I have to agree with you that we are, honestly, there's an African everywhere. In my day life, I'm a CPA and I audit, you know, I do audits. And there was a time I actually went to a very, very rural town in the state of Michigan. And I was so nervous that I was going to be the only Black person there until somebody approached me and told me, asked me if I was Nigerian. I said, yes, how do you know I'm Nigerian? She said, because you speak like a Nigerian. And I almost asked her, how do you know how Nigerians speak? You probably have never seen a Black person before. And she said, no, my English professor is actually from Nigeria. And I looked around me and I thought, oh my goodness, how did we even get here? Like, this place is not even on the map. Like, we're everywhere. It's interesting. David, let me ask you. You carry French and Senegalese passports. Those are, you know, those are Francophone countries, both of them, but they're actually different. They're two different worlds. Which one do you identify with most, Senegal or France?
Well, more and more I'm identifying myself as a Senegalese. And as Claude said, the boundaries of the country, the limits of the countries are more and more blurred. You know, you can feel Senegalese when in New York, when you are in Boston, when you are in Paris. It really depends on the settings you are in and the people you surround yourself with. So I feel more and more Senegalese, really. And when I go to France, actually, I actually don't really feel French when I'm there.
Ah, you know, if you ever meet a Nigerian and ask them what Senegalese means to them, has any Nigerian ever told you what Senegalese is? What we call Senegalese in Nigeria?
I'm curious.
Well, if you pay me, I will tell you. But in Nigeria, one of the very nice, very, very nice items of clothing that men wear, the style is like almost like a kaftan style, but we call it Senegalese for the men. And I would hope that it's from Senegal. I don't know. But since I've been young, since I was, you know, a kid, that's, you know, all we ever heard it being called, you know, Senegalese kaftan. So, hey, that's something to hold.
I'll ask my Nigerian friends here then.
You should ask them. Maybe they even have some packed in their wardrobe.
Maybe.
Over there, so they can show you. So, Claude, let me ask you, what are the six languages that you speak? Did he hear me? Claude, are you there?
No, yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. I'm having a few technical difficulties.
Uh-oh.
I'm hearing only about half of what you're saying, so I'll let David jump in and try to fix this Wi-Fi.
Oh, goodness. I was going to ask you, if you can hear me, what the six languages that you speak are.
Oh, okay. So we start with Mina and Eve in West Africa, and then we go into French and English, and then we get into Spanish and Portuguese. So that's what I'm able to navigate.
Uh-oh.
So it really is very much directly linked to my travels as well.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. That's impressive. That's really impressive. So let me go to you, David. David, did you and Claude meet at MIT, or you had known each other before then?
I had heard about Claude before, and I believe that we were in the same conference at some point, but we actually met in a class at the MIT Media Lab, which is basically the center of innovation at MIT. And we were interested in the same space. We were interested in Africa, and we were interested in mobile phones and mobile technologies. And we started to work together at that time.
And I want to add that we were introduced by Joost Bonsen, who's a professor at the MIT Media Lab, he's a very intuitive man. I would have thought that even he's African, even though he's American of Dutch origin, and he could just tell that David and I would get along. So I want to give credit to Joost. Yeah, absolutely, because he can read people.
That is true.
Wow.
He connects people. He connects everyone at MIT. He's perfect.
That's interesting. And, you know, I have to say, well, I went to Emory, and I think Emory is the best business school in America. But I also want to say that, you know, I think MIT is great because you both are the third and fourth MIT Sloan alums that I've had on this show. And that gives a lot of weight to how much innovation actually comes out of that school. It is amazing. I had two ladies who are into recycling and waste management in
that's
Africa.
Our friends.
Bilikis, yes.
Yeah, she's a friend of ours.
Oh yes, I honestly think that show with Lindsay and Bilikis, I must have laughed the entire time because I couldn't believe that people are making money from waste. It just was just strange to me, but
are you saying we're not making you laugh? Are we not making you laugh? You're saying we're not funny, we have no humor?
No.
We try harder.
No, you know, for you, what you need to do for me is just to package some money in the mobile phones and just transfer it to me from Rome and Hong Kong. Hey, that's all we need right now. But before I go to your, you know, your African business exploits. I want to talk to you, Claude, about you had or you have a magazine called Trace. Do you still own it? Trace magazine?
Yes. Trace magazine was a 15-year experience for me because I had started in London and grown the magazine a lot in New York with international distribution. And then we launched Trace TV, which I'm no longer involved with because we sold the company, but this has now become a very big channel with 150 million viewers around the world. So Trace was a long 15-year experience for me. It was a big defining moment in my adult life, absolutely. And it was the experience that shaped my entrepreneurial thinking and my entrepreneurial approach to kind of problem solving on a local level.
I have to tell you, first of all, that if you started something 15 years ago, you absolutely look young to me. My goodness.
Well, nobody wouldn't believe that I'm actually 42 years old.
No
way. And I started as an entrepreneur in my mid-20s, so absolutely.
Wow, that is interesting. And, you know, I was listening to you speak about Trace one time, and you were talking about the fact that there's so much, you know, community. Everybody can kind of goes to their community. There's nothing that that links us in terms of bridges from one community to the other, you know, and that I really found that to be very interesting because even here in America, in Baltimore, where I live, Washington, D.C., where I work, everybody kind of has their own circle. And I think that that's the reason why we have so many conflicts, because we don't all reach out to one another to try and understand, you know, what really binds us together instead of just identifying what keeps us apart. So I hope, you know, Trace continues to do that, you know, even though,
And we noticed that. We noticed that even amongst the Black diaspora, and how the Caribbeans don't always mix with the Africans and who are also sometimes separate from the African-Americans. And even within Africans, you see a lot of Nigerians hanging out together and the Francophones are in a different corner.
Yes.
And I think media is a great way to bring people together because we have shared interests.
Yeah. That's very true. David, you know, let me ask you, in your family, I can see definitely that, you know, you are embracing your Senegalese side and you are, of course, a world citizen. You are everywhere. How do you see beyond yourself in your family? Do you see people reaching out as you are reaching out? Or do you see even within your own family network or your own friends that everybody's kind of staying in one corner?
Sorry, I didn't get the question. You mean people reaching out to me as friends or family?
Yeah, you reach out to people definitely. With all this work that you're doing, you're reaching out. Do you see the same thing in your immediate family? Or do you see that, you know, do you see this kind of problem that we see in the world where everybody's in their own little corner?
Yeah, I think it's more everybody's in a little corner. I don't see people in my family reaching out to me that much. You know, but we still have the family bonds, but there's there's of course, I mean, there's nothing apart from that, really. I don't really have people reaching out to me for business in my family.
Don't do business with family. You probably don't want to do that. You definitely want to do, don't want to do business. But let me ask you about France. There's something I've heard about France, and I've only been to Paris once, so I'm not an expert about, you know, on French issues. How are Africans economically in France? Because I know that there are a lot of African immigrants. There are a lot of, you know, and of course on the football team, there are, you know, Africans as well. So, but how are Africans doing economically in France?
It's very hard to answer that question. I think you have all types of social status among Africans in France. It is true that there is a big problem of integration, and that all the media speak about. And I'm sure Claude can comment on that quite a lot, because he has written about this.
I think there is definitely a problem in France with some of the Africans who live in the suburbs. Which are obviously the areas where a lot of the low-income French live, because of the housing project situation that was favored by the government. And because of that, there has been a huge integration problem in France. And you can see that in the elite, for instance, where there's very, very little representation of Africans or French of African descent in the elites, whether it's business or on the political level, or even in the level of just the establishment. So I think this is something that France needs to work on in order to integrate more Black and French Africans into the ruling circles. That's something that we've noticed. But there has been progress amongst certain professions, where you have doctors more, you have a lot of lawyers, specifically from Togo, who practice in France, which is also a problem, because a lot of the more educated African French tend to stay in France and not really contribute very much to their home countries.
Interesting. And we will, we will talk more about that topic and a lot more when we come back from this break. And we take a brief commercial break, and we're talking about, you know, African development and how mobile technology is driving that growth. When we come back from this break, you're going to hear about a special project that drew me to Claude and David. Don't go away. This is Impact Africa.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Impact Africa is brought to you by Tope Fajingbesi's House of Ghania, an organization built to inspire. Publishers of What Color Is Your Money, we produce programs and publications and deliver engaging presentations to a wide variety of audiences to develop people and create stronger communities. We also endorse United for Kids Foundation, an organization committed to healing Nigeria and the world, one child at a time. Find us on Facebook at House of Ghania, Twitter at Ghania TFAJ, and on the web at www.ghania.com.
Family caregivers face some tough challenges every day in caring for a partner, parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, or even coworker. You are there to provide the care that these people need after everyone else has gone home. Family Caregivers Unite with Dr. Gordon Atherley will provide you with a social networking experience. You'll hear from experts and others who are experiencing the same things, and together you will promote a common cause. Tune in to Family Caregivers Unite live every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Eastern, 10 a.m. Pacific on Voice America Variety.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Impact Africa. To connect with the program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Tope. That's T-O-P-E at ourfinancialcoach.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Impact Africa, and we are about to get into the meat of the discussion with Claude and David. Claude and David, welcome back to Impact Africa.
It's good to be back.
Yes. Great. And let me remind my listeners that Claude is in Hong Kong.
Tokyo. Not Hong Kong.
Oh, my goodness. He's in Tokyo, Japan. And David is in Rome, Italy. Oh, my goodness.
That's true.
You know, and both of you, you're already in tomorrow, right? You're both in Friday already, right?
Oh, yeah. It's 8:25 a.m. Here in Tokyo.
Oh,
1:25 here.
Oh, my goodness. Well, good morning to you guys and welcome back to Impact Africa.
Thank you.
Okay, so let me ask you, David. The project that you both worked on for the first time, the True Africa Project, took you guys to Togo.
That's true.
Yeah. Yes. So tell me about that project. What happened? What was the goal?
So the goal was actually to do something about the informal sector that, you know, is very big in Africa. And we wanted to help those people who work in the informal sector that makes up maybe 95% of the economy to make a living and attract more clients. So we built a mobile application that worked on any type of mobile phone and that allowed people, it was the equivalent of Yelp, if you want, you know, Yelp, that you have Yelp in the US. Mm-hmm. It was the equivalent of Yelp, but on a simple, basic mobile phone. And we allowed people to rate each other and to find, for instance, the nearest mechanist, the nearest tailor, the nearest hairdresser. And all of that on a simple mobile phone. So that was our goal. And we received some funding from MIT to go to Togo to do some market research, to interview people. We interviewed more than 100 professionals at the bottom of the pyramid. So
That's really interesting.
That's what the first part of True Africa.
That's a very interesting project. Because when I read it, I said, oh, you know, here it's in America, it's almost second nature. I want to go to a restaurant, I check on Yelp. I want to go to, you know, a plumber, I check on Yelp. But, you know, it never really occurred to me that, you know, this is something that, you know, would work in Africa. And Claude, let me ask you about this. You know, why did you choose Togo? Why was Togo the country of choice?
I think Togo, it was a good pilot market because it's a small country. I'm from there. And Togo is right next to Ghana. And the Lomé, the capital where we based a lot of our efforts, is on the border of Ghana. So you have the Ghanaian influence as well, the English-speaking Ghanaian fast-growing influence as well. And then also because there's only two mobile operators in Togo, when most countries have four or five. Nigeria, I think, has five major mobile operators right now. So it was easier to get a handle on mobile behavior and usage of cell phones and what kind of new services we might offer, because it was a smaller sample size that would still be able to speak to the country and to the region as well. So we thought it was a great place to start. And also being able to speak the language, Mina, which is what I've been speaking since I was a child, it made it easier for David and our third partner, Mathieu, when they came in speaking French, to kind of understand with my own native son language what people were actually saying about the way they interacted with the mobile phones.
Interesting. So, you know, what was the reaction, Claude? What was the reaction of the people? Because, you know, you think that when you want to do a project like this, especially you're talking about bottom of the pyramid people, there might be a little resistance. Was there any resistance, or did they embrace the project?
They did, because we sold it as value-added services, and we're just basically going to improve and simplify their lives. So it's not like we're asking them to change their behavior, because we know they already have the mobile phone. It's just, now that you have the mobile phone, how can we simplify your life? You're leading very busy lives, and you rely on this cell phone to do everything. You rely on this cell phone for information, for communication. And so what else can we bring to the table that would make your life easier?
That's interesting. So, David, who pays? So, definitely, you know, there's cash exchanging hands. If I want to find somebody I want to find a plumber in my area, you know, so I call a number on my phone. Is that how it works? Do I get charged, or how does that work?
So basically, you type a simple code on your phone, such as *123#, mm-hmm. and then a menu appears on your very simple phone, and then, for instance, you type 1 if you want to choose for a plumber, you type 2 if you want to find a mechanist, if you type 3 if you want to find a hairdresser, and so on. Then you find, for instance, the district you are in, and and you rely on the keyboard of your phone, and that's very simple to use.
Ah.
So it's a service that can be free or can be accessible at a very low cost, you know, the cost of SMS.
Wow, that's very interesting, because, you know, I was telling you guys during the break that I'm a CPA in my real life, so I travel a lot for audits. And one of the things that I rely on my phone is an app to find, you know, I find a mosque, I find food, I find, you know, like, you know, where to go and exercise. Like, I just press on my phone and it's almost like second nature. So I can imagine that this is, you know, going well. So what's the state of this project right now in Togo? How is it doing? Claude.
The thing is, though, when you said, I just wanted to clarify just quickly, when you said I use my phone for all these things, you have a smartphone, which is the case for most of people in America. You know, we were very much focused on people initially who didn't have a smartphone. So we were focused on people who have the old feature phones. Remember the old black and white Nokias?
Yes.
The grayscale ones that we used to carry around. That was our constituency, people who did not have smartphones and who did not have these applications. So we were finding ways to find services and that could work for them as well. So I wanted to clarify that, because even though smartphone penetration is increasing quite rapidly across Africa, including in Togo, it's important to note that not everyone has a smartphone, so you mm-hmm. have to find a way to service them as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, that's actually the fact, and which leads me actually to the question I wanted to ask next, which is, you know, you have a lot of communities, a lot of villages in Africa where there is no power supply, you know, and we always think about power as the basic need, but it looks as if mobile phones have, you know, have become the basic thing now. And, you know, it's not, people don't have light, but they use their mobile phones as touch lights, you know, in the night. So it's very important that those people in those villages, even though they don't have power or they don't have clean water, they have access to information. And, you know, I think that's very important. So is the project doing very well in Togo? Is it still existing, even though you guys have graduated?
So actually, we twisted the project a little bit, and we're focusing on smartphones, which is the future. We realized that, you know, smartphones are going to take off pretty quickly in Africa, and they are basically leapfrogging traditional tools for accessing internet, and we believe that apps are in Africa promised to a very bright future, because, you know, the price of smartphone is going down. The cost of data is going down. The cables there are many cables that are connecting to the coastal countries in Africa that are bringing broadband internet. So for all these reasons, we believe that apps are the real future of Africa. So and in fact, I was talking to an IT professor who is based in Dakar a few months ago, and she was telling me that she went to a class of 30 university students. Only 3 of them had a smartphone, and out of those 3 people, only one of them used apps. But she went to a high school, and about 9 out of 10 kids she met in the class had a smartphone.
Wow.
And they all use Facebook, Instagram apps, and so on. So the real future is apps in Africa through smartphones.
Wow.
So that's why now we've decided to focus on developing mobile application for smartphones.
Wow, that's very interesting. You know, Claude, let me ask you a question. You know, there's one sector in Africa that is particularly very concerning to me, that is very, as somebody who is very involved in nonprofit work in Africa, I'm very concerned about the health care sector. And all this mobile technology and all this increase in, you know, mobile usage hasn't affected healthcare at all. Is there a way that we can create an app to facilitate, you know, emergency services, flow of information in terms of like healthcare and things like that? Is there anything happening in this area?
Yeah, there is actually. We actually met a few people who were working on this specifically at MIT and also in Africa. It's really mobile diagnostics. You know, there's different ways now to use the mobile phone to find out how people are feeling and to test actually from a distance. So there is huge progress in what they call mHealth, mobile health. And I'm a big believer that as smartphones become more prevalent across Africa, there might be more doctors communicating with their patients in rural or hard-to-reach areas. And I think the mHealth sector is going to be one of the fastest-growing sectors across value-added services for smartphone users in the next few years. So that's something that I care about tremendously. And these are the kind of things that we're helping to try to implement across the African nations that we're interested in working in.
You know, and I that cannot come soon enough, because I don't know about Senegal, I don't know about Togo, but I can tell you about Nigeria that healthcare is not working. You know, every single ailment that you see in terms of in Nigeria right now, people are going to India to try and get treatment and getting. We have worked with some patients to even get medical records to go to India, and I can tell you that getting those records is just like pulling teeth. It's definitely hard. But David, let me ask you a question. You are the mobile director in True.
Yes.
Yeah. What are the industries that you see that, you know, the use of mobile technology is really the one driving the growth in those industries in Africa?
Well, I mean, one of the most obvious one and the one we're focusing on right now is the media and entertainment industry, because, you know, people, all the news website, all the movies website, all these websites that require a high level of interaction are a great model for smartphone applications. So we're actually focusing on clients that we're actually focusing on companies that have businesses on media and entertainment, and we're building apps for them. Because people are more and more mobile now, and they want to consume media, and they want to consume entertainment everywhere they are using their smartphones.
We
see the smartphone as a very, very big in that space too.
That's very important. I have to tell you that, please, you need to do me a favor. There's a program that I watch that is on Mnet in Africa.
Yes.
They don't show it in America, but they show it all over Africa. So please help me tell them to put an app out so that I can watch it in America. It's called Tincel.
Okay.
So this is my shameful plug. Please make sure. Okay. David, are you promising me?
Oh, yeah. Is it Africa Magic?
Yes, Africa Magic Entertainment. Yeah.
Know it, yeah.
It's 7:30 in Nigeria every day, Monday to Friday. Are you both promising me that there will be an app for Tincel? I'm holding you, whether you promise or not. There will be.
We pray with you.
No, don't pray with me.
We have some friends who are also creating apps for Nollywood movies too.
So
that's become a big export as well. Yeah. So there's an app for everything now that you can imagine.
I can just imagine. So let me. I want to ask you both one final question. I will start with you, Claude. Claude, what do you see, if I'm looking at Africa and I'm looking at mobile telecommunications, in the next 5 years, where is Africa going to be relative to the rest of the world? Did you hear me, Claude?
No, I'm sorry. Oh, okay. I didn't hear that last question.
Yeah, I said that, you know, if you're looking at Africa in terms of mobile telecommunications in the next 5 years, where will we be compared to the rest of the world?
We're going to leapfrog. I think we're going to leapfrog, and we're going to be actually ahead of the rest of the world, because a lot of our African brothers and sisters have used a phone for the first time through mobiles. So I think that because it's so innate and it's so natural, the usage of mobile phones, even for some illiterate people that we interviewed in Togo who are illiterate but are able to use a mobile phone very well, I think that because of that rapid progress that we made in the last 10, 15 years, in the next 5 to 10 years, we're going to leapfrog a lot of the other continents in terms of mobile adoption and mobile usage.
And I have to agree with you. David, let me ask you one final question.
Yeah.
You know, with mobile technology comes risk, security risk. African security apparatus is heavily dependent on government, and we don't have, you know, I can speak for Nigeria, that's not too advanced. How are you all dealing with this, you know, part of the equation?
The security issues on using mobile phones?
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's true that right now people have not been focusing on it a lot. You can see that M-Pesa, for instance, the most successful mobile money services in the world, is facing some issues with regards to regulators that want to be more sure. But also they want to, of course, get some tax revenue from it. But, you know, I think they will come at some point, and we'll need to standardize the security features to make it on par with what we have in the rest of the world. But I think it's just a matter of time before people use smartphones for anything, you know, without having any fear for their security.
Well, I hope that day comes, because, you know, I'm looking forward to these big days where we're using mobile phones for everything, but I'm also very nervous and very cautious, and I'm hoping that we will, you know, get to the point where our security apparatus is at par. But gentlemen, thank you so much for joining me this morning at your own time. I wish you the very best, and I hope that we will be in touch with you for future conversations.
Thank you so much, Tope, for your time. And we really look forward to talking to you again.
All right. Thank you. Have a very good day. All right. Bye-bye.
Have a good day. Bye.
Yeah. So we're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, I'm going to be joined by yet another powerful guest. Don't go away. This is Impact Africa.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Impact Africa is brought to you by Tope Fajingbesi's House of Ghania, an organization built to inspire. Publishers of What Color Is Your Money, we produce programs and publications and deliver engaging presentations to a wide variety of audiences to develop people and create stronger communities. We also endorse United for Kids Foundation, an organization committed to healing Nigeria and the world, one child at a time. Find us on Facebook at House of Ghania, Twitter at Ghania TFAJ, and on the web at www.ghania.com. How do you know if you're living with an addict? If you think you know all the recognizable signs, you probably don't. If you're listening to and reading from the so-called experts, you probably don't. You need to hear from a parent, just like yourself, who has been there and can tell you what it's like firsthand. Please listen to Afflicted by Addiction with Bradley DeHaven. Our program is heard every Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Variety Channel. It just might save your life, or the life of someone you love.
Hi, I'm Ed Krell, CEO of Destination Maternity. We proudly support the March of Dimes work in reducing premature births. Almost 500,000 babies are born too soon in the United States. We're helping the March of Dimes fund cutting-edge research and life-saving programs to help moms in our communities have full-term pregnancies and healthy babies. Join us during Prematurity Awareness Month in working together for stronger, healthier babies. Visit marchofdimes.com.
Emotional intelligence has been documented to be the most important skill for a leader to move up in an organization. Leader's Playbook will unpack what emotional intelligence is, why it is important, and how you can raise your emotional intelligence for yourself, your direct reports, and your teams. Join Dr. Relly Nadler every Monday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern, to the Leader's Playbook on the Voice America Business Channel. Your success could depend on it.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
Being Here with Ariel and Shia Kane is an ordinary person's guide to modern-day enlightenment. This show is an exciting exploration which opens the door to living in the moment. Don't miss Being Here. Tune in every Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 noon Eastern with Ariel and Shia Kane right here on the Seventh Wave Network.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com. You are listening to Impact Africa. To connect with the program today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to Tope. That's T-O-P-E at ourfinancialcoach.com. Now, back to our show.
Welcome back to Impact Africa with me, Topa Fajin-Gbesi, and I'm back now with another powerful guest of mine. I have John Gozier on the phone with me. John, welcome to Impact Africa.
Hi, thank you.
And John is a globally recognized software developer, is a designer, is a philanthropist, is the CEO of D8A, a design agency and innovation firm. And he's also the founder of Africa's tech consulting, App Africa, and a big startup, MetaLayer. He's the founder of nonprofit organizations like AfriLabs, Hive Collabs, and a lot more. And he has done so much. One of the things that really fascinated me about John is that in 2009, he spoke at the TED in Oxford, UK, about his work connecting rural African villages to the internet through a call center and light infrastructure. So, you know, I really want to talk more about that today. You're welcome once again, John.
Thank you. It sounds like you've done your research.
I tried. You know, honestly, do you know one of the things that I need to clear? I actually thought you were from Uganda. Are you not from Uganda?
No, I'm not. I am American. I moved to Uganda in 2008.
Oh, my goodness.
Started developing the technology and stuff that I do. Started Africa then. But I am Black American. I am not African.
I'm telling you.
And I think that it's important for all members of the diaspora to recognize the power and opportunity Africa has to offer.
I have to agree with you. But honestly, I took it for granted that you were African because I saw all the things that you had done, you know, concerning African development, especially in the tech space. And then when I was like, no, he's not American. He's Ugandan. And I was like, no, he's not. But tell me what drew you to Africa, apart from the fact that, of course, you are African originally, but what drew you to go back and be so involved to the extent of living in the continent?
Well, I mean, I can't say that I went with some grand epiphany of what needed to happen or all the solutions that I've been able to participate in. I actually went with an ex-girlfriend to support her career. And I was there for a couple of years. And while there, I mean, the relationship didn't last, but the things that I had established, like the company Africa and some of the other technical solutions that we were working on, continue. And so it's become a huge part of my life.
Wow. You know, honestly, there's always a reason why everything happens. You know, definitely you're going to Africa. At the time you were going, wasn't to do all this stuff, but the reason why the relationship didn't work out, everything was just so that you could go and contribute all this. And when I look at your footprint, you're all over Africa. You know, I'm talking about Ushahidi, that's, you know, Kenya. Then you are in, Uganda, everywhere. It's like, even for me, who is a native of Nigeria, I haven't impacted anything beyond my four walls of my hometown. So that's definitely very impressive. That's really
well. I mean, I try to keep a holistic perspective of what's going on across the continent. And you know, when I was in Uganda, I felt very confined. I mean, it's a big country and there's a lot going on. But I also, you know, knew that there's a whole lot more. I mean, the continent's nearly four times the size of the United States. So I just wanted to get out and explore and contribute to as much as possible.
And you definitely have done that. You know, let me ask you this question. What is App Africa? What is App Africa?
Sure. So App Africa is the company I started in 2008 in Uganda. It focuses on helping global technology companies and media companies enter African markets and do business within those markets. So we do a lot of market research. We develop technical solutions. We do product testing. You know, we work with some of the biggest companies on the planet, some of the, you know, companies that aren't so big, but ultimately to help them figure out how to reach African consumers. And vice versa, we work with African companies to help them reach global markets. We take a portion of the profits that we make from Africa and from our company Africa and D8A, And we reinvest it into a fund that we started called Apps for Africa, where we invest in young African technologists.
Wow. And how has that experience been? Have you discovered, you know, who are some of the young men and, you know, what are some of the impacts that you all have made with this?
Well, with the Apps for Africa program, it's been really exciting. It's been running for about 4 years, 4.5 years now. We have invested in 19 companies. 11 of those companies are still active. They've gone on to raise nearly $1 million. Those 11 companies, about $90,000 each. And it's just really exciting to be able to help the next generation kind of follow the footpath of, you know, people like myself and companies like Ushahidi and some of the other great solutions that have, you know, that we now know so much about. But there's a whole new wave of brilliant minds that we're really excited to be able to support. And the thing that I always stress is that these are investments, right? These are investments not because we're trying to, you know, exploit every aspect of the market, but because for Africa to truly thrive, I believe that people have to reinvest in its youth because they'll be the ones creating the jobs and the wealth for tomorrow.
That's and you're right, because Africa has the most youthful population in the world, but also over half of those people are not employed. So
many
and all of them are carrying mobile phones. They're all wired somehow. So why not, you know, help them bring out some of these things? But you know, you've enjoyed some very good relationships with like the US State Department, like TED. And a lot of people might say, you know, it's because he's an American. That's why he's able to get all these big names to, you know, back him up. How easy or how hard is it for you to get all this, you know, big names to believe in the vision that you have?
Well, see, this is why I feel it's important for the diaspora to reconnect. So, I mean, there are some realities of the fact that, you know, I speak the same language, I come from the same culture, you know, I know some of the nuances of working with these organizations that is unique to being American. That said, the fact that I'm able to do the things that I'm able to do allows other people, the companies we invest in, the African companies that we work with, they now have those same relationships. And it's just about... it's trade. It's sharing. It's sharing knowledge, sharing information, sharing connections. And we have to stop thinking in like these little silos of, oh, well, these guys are the Americans and these guys are the French. And, you know, over there is the Congolese and over here is the Ugandans. Like, we all have so much to learn and share with each other that can truly change the continent for the better.
And how can we do this? You know, now we're all, you know, using mobile phones, but it's easier for you to call somebody or to connect with somebody in from Uganda when you want to connect to somebody in America than if you want to connect with somebody in Kenya or Tanzania. Somehow we're talking to outsiders, but Africa, how can mobile technology make us talk to ourselves within the continent of Africa?
Well, I mean, I think that I think it's starting to happen. It's just inevitable as people travel more, as people come to be exposed to more. I think that the cost of bandwidth I know that the cost of bandwidth has fallen dramatically since when I lived in Uganda. And, you know, now that those telecommunication networks for internet access are cheaper, you have people who are communicating online, they're interacting with one another. I think more of that will just continue to happen. Hopefully, I mean, the biggest barrier to all of this actually isn't technology, and it's not the cost of travel per se. The biggest barrier is the barriers that governments put up between, you know, countries to, you know, keep people from traveling from one place to another. And, you know, hopefully policy does change to allow for more trade within the continent and interaction within the continent.
And I, you know, I don't even want to touch on the government issue because it gets me started and then I would just get cut off if I start talking about African government. But, you know, one of the things that impressed me when I was thinking about, you know, bringing you on the show was the fact that you had interest in connecting rural African villages to the internet through a call center and light infrastructure. You know, how did you come up with that? Why did you think about that and how is that going?
Well, so that project, so speaking of being able to learn from other cultures, other regions, that project actually began in India. It was started by a woman named Rose Schumann. The project was called Question Box. And what she had set up was a very simple solution that allowed women in India to call this call center and they would ask and answer questions. They would ask questions of other operators who might be hundreds of miles away who could give them the answer. When we brought the solution to Africa, she wanted to come to Africa, and we started working together. And one of the things I told her is, like, it doesn't make sense for you to kind of set up these phones all over the continent. I mean, Africa has phones in spades. Like, it doesn't need new phones. What you need to focus on is the information component. What people are really looking for is the knowledge that they can't find because they aren't connected or because people in their immediate area don't know. So what we were able to do was set up this call center. We set it up at Hive Collab in Uganda, which is an innovation hub in Kampala. We had four women who spoke four different dialects within Uganda serve as our operators. And then we went out to rural parts of Uganda, I don't remember which specific villages, but we went to rural parts of Uganda and we just published a phone number that said, if you have a question, call this number. And we didn't tell people how to use it. We didn't tell people what it was for. They just started calling in and asking questions about what they wanted to know. And the whole idea was, you know, you and I, we have access to the internet. If I want to know what the nearest, restaurant is, or if I want to know who my local politician is, or if I want to know something about the world, some world fact, I can look it up on Google or Wikipedia. In rural parts of many parts of the world, they don't have that luxury. And so this service was trying to offer the ability to just question the world around you and also, you know, get specific answers to specific questions. The most prominent types of questions we got were related to agriculture. It was farmers asking about, you know, my bananas have this certain pattern on them, what might be plaguing my crop, and we could actually tell them. And we started to get really interesting insights because we could see across all these different people calling from different villages that they were being affected by the same crops. It was really interesting.
Wow, that's very interesting, and I see how that can definitely cut to growth. I want to continue this conversation, but I'm getting, you know, beeps that, you know, my time is up. But I want to thank you so much for coming and for doing what you're doing. So many of us Africans have to learn from you. We have to go back to the continent and really create growth. I wish you the very best, and I hope that we will continue to connect and impact Africa positively. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Thank you very much for listening to Impact Africa today. I've learned so much from my guests, and I hope you also learned a lot from them. And so I hope we'll go out and make those mobile phones count. You know, like John just said, you can set up a number, get people information, rural farmers, who knows what you can do? The opportunities are limitless. You know, we can impact Africa with this technology. Thank you. I wish you all the best, and I hope to see you again same time next week. Good night.
Thank you again for tuning in to Impact Africa. Please join Tope Fajingbesi again next Thursday at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Have a good week.